Welcome to the Blockchain and Healthcare Today Platform Approaches Journal podcast series. This is where research and innovation collide. Today, our guests are Christian Wiring, PhD, Customer Success Manager at Sverity, and David Kessler, President of Logisim. They discuss why industry standards matter in fulfilling the intent of DSCSA. Now let's listen in and learn where the market's heading.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing today?
Hey, David, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. It's always nice to speak with you.
Likewise.
So, thank you. I just wanted to say hello to everyone. Just also a quick thank you and shout out to BHTY for allowing Chris and I to speak on this podcast today. With BHTY being the leading international journal focused on healthcare and technology innovations, we certainly feel very privileged to bring some content to you all today around the subject of standards and regulatory compliance in the DSCSA healthcare space. So with that said, Chris, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. So I'm Dr. Chris Wörlich. I currently work as a customer success manager at a German startup called Sverity. Sverity builds decentralized identity management solutions. And I've entered this software space taking a rather scenic route. I worked in as a biomedical researcher in scientific consultancy in oil and gas industry, and I've even worked in financial statement audit. How about your background, David?
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, hello. My name is David Kessler. I'm a co-owner and president of the company Logisim. My background for the last 27 years has been in the technology and business management space. Started my career in technology with database design, networking, website development types of areas, and transitioned into the ERP systems world, spending the next 14 years working with supply chain systems and companies. Managed projects and implementations, as well as sales operations to wholesalers, distributors, manufacturers throughout the US and internationally. After serving in different executive sales and operational roles for several technology companies, I joined my current business partners at Logisim in 2009. Since that time, we've helped grow the business into the leading provider of SaaS-based compliance solutions for this pharmaceutical industry and companies throughout the United States. So when we first said hello this morning, I also mentioned DSCSA. So it might be good to kind of define what we're going to talk about today. So let me do that real quick. There's something called the Drug Quality and Security Act. That's DQSA. And it was enacted by Congress 10 years ago, back in November of 2013. So near exactly 10 years ago. And so you might be familiar with that. Also, there is something called Title II of DQSA, and that is the Drug Supply Chain Security Act, which I was referring to as DSCSA. And that outlines steps to achieve interoperable electronic tracing of products at the package level to identify tracing certain prescription drugs as they are distributed throughout the United States. And the idea behind this is it will enhance FDA's ability to help protect consumers from exposure to drugs that may be counterfeit or stolen, contaminated in any way, basically anything that might be harmful to us. In these requirements, it'll also improve detection and removal of potentially dangerous drugs from the drug supply chain for U.S. consumers. And so that's really the goal of this and really why it's so important to focus in on. Chris, would you mind kind of giving us an update of where we are today after these last 10 years?
Sure. So we are in a bit of a funny period right now because the DSCSA as a law is now fully enforceable since the 27th of November, 2023. However, FDA announced a couple of months ago that the agency will not take enforcement action on certain requirements within this law. for another 12 months. And they call this period the stabilization period. So this means that whilst there's no enforcement on certain requirements, that's important to note. Other requirements have already been enforceable for a while, for a few years. And also it means that not everyone has to follow FDA's lead. So it's only the agency announced this. Some state regulators followed suit, others might not. Other organizations like PBMs or even trading partners might not follow this. So whichever organization has a right or some interest in like auditing their supply chain partners based on DSCSA, in principle, they can do this now and then use whatever leverage they have over the auditee to react to non-compliance. So that's why it's a funny period, because it's a bit of a gray zone in certain respects. Mm-hmm. Now, you might wonder why FDA decided to go this way. Basically, they have assessed what the industry has done over these last 10 years and realized that certain requirements, especially the ones around the enhanced drug distribution security, short EDDS, are very demanding. And FDA said, okay, we acknowledge you've worked hard on this, but you're not quite there yet. So we're going to give you 12 more months time. And part of this is also to avoid serious disruption to the drug supply chain so that patients can still get access to drugs, to safe drugs as well, while the companies are still switching over and getting fully compliant. What was also clear from FDA's announcement is that they do expect every trading partner to work towards this compliance in this year. So it's not a period to put your feet up because you got a breather. The breather is there exactly to get organized, test the systems, and make it all work to be ready then on 27th of November in 2024. Now, you might wonder why this is such a big deal. Why this EDDS stuff is causes so much complication. And the reason is that the decentralized nature of the US pharmaceutical supply chain. Now, what do I mean with decentralized? In this case, I'm referring to two main aspects. The EDDS requirements focus on sort of electronic product information exchange. The product information doesn't sit in a single database. It sits in different databases that are managed by manufacturers mainly. So that's a challenge to tap into these different database systems. And the other decentralized aspect of this structure in the supply chain is that everyone uses different systems and different service providers. So a pharmacy system will differ from a manufacturer system, for example, because they have been built to cater for very different needs. But now they are being asked to be compatible with each other to enable this data exchange. Mm-hmm. And to achieve this is no mean feat, but that's exactly what DSA is asking for by requesting for interoperability between all these systems.
So it sounds like with all of the EDDS requirements in these different systems and how decentralized they are, there must be some need to standardize, I guess, the exchange of information here in some ways. Is that something you can touch on as well?
Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head there, David. So I see it in the way that the stabilization period is really now a time for the standards that have been developed to prove that they're living up to practice to enable this interoperability. Maybe we should quickly explain what they mean by standards. So specifically, mm-hmm. we're referring to technology standards. So it's basically common rule sets that tell service providers, technology builders, how to build the products. You might want to think of email as an analogy. So I could have like a Microsoft Outlook account and you could have a Gmail account. And still we can send each other emails, no bother. We can even send each other calendar invites and things. And that's only possible because at some point in time, somebody sat down and thought, you know, thought about how this should all be structured. And then people agreed that this is, you know, this is a suitable way to do it. And everyone followed suit. And a similar thing basically happened in this 10-year preparation period in the run-up to the DSCSA deadline. Now, getting to this point is, again, no mean feat. So what, from my perspective, from my experience being involved in these standardization processes a little bit, what I've observed is that there are two main approaches to such a challenge. Organizations have come together and looked at what standards exist already. So they looked at W3C, NIST, GS1, for example. These are long-standing, you know, trusted standard setters, and picked standards that were available already. And then other standards had to be newly developed. So I know that GS1, for example, has also specifically for DSCSA developed new standards on message exchanges. And then the second big approach, or yeah, the second approach to this challenge of how do we get to standards was that new organizations have been born out of the necessity created by DSCSA. And one of them, for example, is the Partnership for DSCSA Governance, in short, PDG. And another one is OCI, the Open Credentialing Initiative. And again, these are not... Technically, these are not standard setters like GS1 or NIST, but these are organizations that have developed shared guidelines for industry to observe, to help align what needs to be done, and also to fit in these existing standards from NIST and stuff. So they basically decided on how can we make the existing standards useful for the purpose of DSCSA. So that's maybe all a bit abstract. David, you are involved in PDG and OCI. Would you mind explaining to us how you have seen this all happen?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for that overview of how those standards are helping, and certainly our contribution around that has been, you know, very focused in the area of due diligence and compliance. And and the reason for that is, you know, kind of like what you talked about. We've got standards out there. We have some different guidelines. One of the ones that you mentioned was NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's certainly a standard that's very widely adopted in the pharmaceutical space, healthcare space. And so, yes, we were leveraging some of those things that were already out there to do a couple things. And so certainly the system compatibility so that data exchanges can happen, that certainly is very important. We were utilizing a verifiable credential. And you know, I could probably expand on that a little bit, but basically the idea that, you know, data can be exchanged within a payload that can be trusted and verified and can have expirations and revocations and things around it. So so that when someone's looking at it, they know that, you know, it's valid. But, you know, a very important part of what we're doing and how we're utilizing those different organizations or standards that you mentioned is in the area of trust. And that's where authentication and authorization really, really touch. And so as part of DSCSA, there's a ATP status that has to be proven. And ATP status is an authorized trading partner status. And depending on the role that you might be in the supply chain, a manufacturer, wholesaler, retailer, you know, so I could be a pharmacy or a large manufacturer or something in the middle where I'm moving product as a distributor. All of those different roles have been defined with certain criteria that would allow them to be an authorized trading partner. So typically this is some type of licensing information at the state level or registration information at the federal and state level. And so that authorization that takes place is how these different data exchanges, using again those standards that you mentioned, Chris, how those data sets can be moved within the supply chain. So maybe someone's asking a question and getting a response, and to do that, both parties need to be sure that they're authorized trading partners. And so that's great, and that can be done. But we also have an issue with authentication. And this is because of the decentralized aspect that you talked about. So certainly there are trading partners that move product from A to B, right? So they are direct trading partners. They know each other. They've exchanged information and product, purchase orders and invoices and, you know, financial data, all sorts of stuff over the years. But then there's also relationships that are out there that are indirect, so that maybe someone at the retail level, say a pharmacy, might need to ask a question to a manufacturer that they don't buy from because they don't go direct, right? They go through their wholesaler or a secondary distributor or someone else, in order to move that product through the supply chain and get to them. And so in this case where there's an indirect relationship there, certainly you need to prove that you know who you're talking to. And again, by regulation, from a DSCSA standpoint, you need to make sure that they're authorized, right? That ATP status. But that authentication is where we lean on those NIST standards that we've been mentioning. And that's to make sure that there's a level of trust that can be established so that when someone says, this is who I am, you can trust that. And so it's a certain amount of due diligence that has to be done in order to get to that level of trust. And what's been said is actually an assurance level 2. So that's basically the highest level that you can have of establishing identity without actually being face to face with somebody. And so basically that authentication lets us know that, yes, indeed, this is who we expect to be exchanging information with, and they are authorized. They do have ATP status. And because that can now be packaged with a verifiable credential in a way that can be interoperable with other systems, now this decentralized approach here has now established trust between the authentication and authorization areas. And now the data can flow and you can trust what you're doing. Because if not, then you have to fall back into some other type of alternative process where you're maybe manually checking something. And you can imagine that's pretty time consuming and it certainly has its own risk around it. So that's really what we're doing in the due diligence and verifiable credential space and how we're working with those different standard bodies to make sure that it's all interoperable.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And you can really see how beautiful a use case that is for verifiable credentials, because they can really help. And yeah, they can really like help you automate regulatory compliance and get rid of a lot of like headache and heartache, I would think, considering the compliance departments. And it also, and thanks to, and it's kind of cool how people came together to develop these standards to enable that interoperability, this compatibility across the whole supply chain network. Because then this is just a tech layer, and now all these trading partners need to develop their processes and SOPs and whatnot on top of that to make it all flow nicely. But the tech builds here a really good foundation, right? And
absolutely.
And another aspect I see, another benefit of the standards here I see, is that they create an open market. Like anyone who has access to standards can choose to comply with them and then provide a service that is compatible. And in that sense is also in the spirit of DSCSA, right? And the more freely and openly available these standards are, the lower the barrier of entry is for those service providers. So I know through my involvement with OCI, like those standards or those guidelines that say are freely available through the website, and W3C standards are also freely available. So that's a super foundation for technology to evolve as well, and also for like platform approaches to come into being.
Yeah, agreed for sure. And you know, just to kind of conclude here, I think, you know, when, you know, FDA and these regulations have been in, you know, in the space now for 10 plus years, the real driver here is a consumer need has been solved, right? I mean, the idea that patients can trust the drugs that they're receiving because they can trust the security around that supply chain, you know, that's really paramount here. And so, you know, this is how, you know, that's being delivered, is through the standards, through the technology. And like you said, allowing individual trading partners now to wrap their policies and procedures around that, so that they can deliver on that secure supply chain, meet the requirements that are in DSCSA. So it certainly drives home the idea that you know, we all want to be able to trust the drugs that we were able to get from our doctor or our pharmacy. So
yeah,
thanks, Chris. This was fun. It was a great discussion, and certainly you know, want to again thank Blockchain and Healthcare Today, BHTY, for allowing us to come and speak today.
Yeah, big thanks from me as well to you and the journal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your tuning in to BHTY's podcast series. Want to learn more or have a comment about the program? Do you have a novel topic or solution to share with our audience? If so, send an email to info@partnersindigitalhealth.com or visit the open access peer-reviewed Blockchain and Healthcare Today Platform Approaches Journal. Thanks for listening.